to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Well, good morning, Columbia CSL. A home away from home when we need to remember who we are. Welcome, everybody, far and wide. I'm glad you're here, and I'm certainly delighted to be back with you this first Sunday in August, where we're entering into a new monthly theme called self-care. An idea which can be demonstrated, of course, by many self-honoring actions. It certainly can be about long bubble baths, if you like them, or spontaneous getaways, but never about living mindlessly. Our soul knows that this life is more than surviving defeats and rejections. It's about using them to transform ourselves. The art in anything or of anything is found in the unique process of our rearranging ourselves. And we can't do that if we don't make time for it. So today I'm going to introduce the idea of surrendering our name, plural, as a way to rearrange the self. And we have the power to do this because we are, as Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Science of Mind, reminds us that the thinker behind the thought is who we are. And that translates and expresses, of course, through our emotion and body of all our affairs. And in this, we needn't let go of the many names we have given ourselves, but instead of us letting them be our guide, we can become an observer of the self and present with the self at the same time. And we are better equipped when we surrender the names we have used to identify ourselves. You know, I started to think about this, and I was given my name. I didn't choose it consciously. We were all given our names, birth names. We liked them or we didn't. I didn't like mine at all. But apparently I was going to be called Judy or Jill. So actually, in the end, I prefer it. You know, we kept our names or we changed them. Some of us got married, perhaps once, many, many times. But the interesting thing as I was writing this talk is that I've kept my same name since birth. And I've grown very attached to it. It is my nomenclature to the world. It is how others know me, reach me, think of me, remember me, but it is not who I am. All my life, I have resisted the labels of others. Now realizing, of course, that I am attracted to, or rather I attracted those who saw me as I saw myself. Still, I say in this new awareness, I am not to be labeled. I wanted to share with you a workshop I created when I was a youth minister in my early ministry that came out of this particular discovery around my resistance to being labeled. I had my teens write on many band-aids a word that described who they labeled themselves as. I know I said band-aids, not sticky notes. And then I did a meditation with them where I brought them into the wholeness and light beingness of love, their essence. And I had them feel that and then see themselves standing in a familiar place in their life with this same state of light being. Then I asked them to walk to a mirror and begin one by one consciously to remove the labels they had put on themselves. And I asked them to share gratitude for each of those labels, for leading them right to this place of choice to be free and expanded and open to new thoughts about themselves. Yes, of course, there were a few comments made during the exercise about how it stung or hurt to remove them and why couldn't I have used sticky notes, but it's not easy removing labels, is it? It might seem far easier sometimes to love thy neighbor, but as thyself, It's a great idea. You know, we've been hearing for centuries, but its true value would only exist if we loved ourselves. This idea places us smack dab in the middle of our deep inner inclusion work with respect to supporting a world that works for everyone, which attracts most of us, doesn't it? It helps to be aware, you know, I think when surrendering our false ideas of self or some labels, that there is a universal creative process and a human process. Now, a good religious scientist would say, well, wait a minute, Nadine, they are absolutely one and the same. Well, yes and no. You know, even though the universal creative process works seamlessly and impersonally as the law of cause and effect in and through the human or each of us, our unique ego has its own special agenda based on attachment to its particular identification system. And that has us second guess this infinite creative intelligence. And when that system feels threatened, oh, fear enters the equation. And I think most often there is the tendency to hold on even tighter to one's false beliefs rather than practicing surrender. In fact, when you hear the word surrender at times like that, you want the person who is saying it to step away. How many times do you think that you've uttered the words, I know, when the truth is, you don't have a clue? I know is a deflective response often used when we don't want to look at our own discomfort or fear of that which we have not experienced or have experienced, but still cannot relate to in that moment. Well, I've certainly learned that I create more peace when I accept that I just don't know what I don't know and accept what I do know. Facing the fear asks us to proceed in faith in the face of both. I've grown up in this teaching to realize that the best method of supporting others to be present with their fear and feel empowered to transform it is to be honest about when I am feeling fearful and invite others in to witness my process. And that is leaving myself vulnerable. It's taking a risk. Now, granted, there are many ways one can do this. I, however, at a bottomed out time in my life, I transformed by actually falling into a vat of absurdity, of nonsense, and extremely animated behavior in an alter ego named Louis the Clown. And by the way, all of what I just described as my experience of clowning was exactly how I described my life when I was gripped by the talons of substance abuse. However, then I did not have the capacity to truly stand beside myself and witness myself. I did not know then what I know now, which is I am not my thoughts. I am the thinker behind my thoughts. Even though I did not intellectually grasp this truth then, something within me guided me into the experience of that truth in a way that I was able to see it and be it as my alter ego, Louis. So just for fun, I'm going to take a risk here. I would like to demonstrate to you my long day's journey into night and back into day and back into night and back into day. Whoa! Who turned out the lights? I can't see in the dark. I might trip or fall. I could get permanent lost or scared out of my mind. I won't be able to find my way. Worst of all, I may kick the bucket, bite the dust, push the daisies, you know, meet my end. Oh, wait, I have an idea. There's got to be a light around here someplace. I can find one. Just a minute. Got to hurry and get out of this darkness. Whoa, a big lighter. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Holy sunshine, it's bright in here. Oh, the light is blinding me. I can hardly see for the light. I better call EMS, Emergency Minister Services, to help me find a happy medium. Oh, here she is now, Dr. Nadine. Louie, medium? No. I'm not in the psychic business, but I am in the business of helping you get used to the light so that you can see it in the darkness. Yeah. So living a spiritual life is not about living without the experience of fear, because it is precisely in the moments of fear when we are most at attention and present with how we are feeling and thinking. It is here where our strength and courage can be consciously harnessed to shift perspective on our relationship with whatever we deem is threatening our safety or peace. We must be present to secure a sense of inner harmony, and that asks us to turn away from the power we have given the condition or object or person of our discomfort or fear so that we can better see the truth within it. I have learned that freedom is not gained by retreating from the world, but by engaging in the world and understanding it as the expression of my own consciousness energy. Surrender thy name. Here's another story I'd like to share with you to illustrate this. Our spiritual leader of Centers for Spiritual Living worldwide, Dr. Edward Villeneuve, recently told a wheelbarrow story. And he told it to illustrate the difference between belief and faith. So it goes like this. A tightrope walker walked across a rope over a canyon and came back. At which point he asked the onlookers, he said, "Do you believe I can walk across this rope and back without falling?" "Oh, yes," they said. Then he walked pushing an empty wheelbarrow and back, asking his onlookers, "Do you think I can walk across this rope pushing a wheelbarrow without falling?" "Oh, of course," they said. Then he put a person in the wheelbarrow and pushed it across the rope and back and asked, "Who among you would like to sit in the wheelbarrow and let me carry them across the canyon?" Well, nobody volunteered. The difference between belief that it is safe to sit in the wheelbarrow and the faith to sit in the wheelbarrow and cross the canyon is the same gap between my observation of who I am and my faith in who I really am. With belief, we are safe. When exercising faith, we do put ourselves out on a limb we don't know. We need to be upfront about the unknown element. What do we count on when we climb in the barrel to cross the canyon? The open space between who we identify as and our conscious, intentional becoming. A new way of thinking. That's what we count on. A new way of thinking to catch us in our old fearful thoughts. And what if we fall? Well, it will not be because of all that we did do in faith in preparation up to that point. It will be because there is always a risk, and sometimes we fall. And then, well, we keep practicing our faith. This helps us know in life when to get into the barrel and when we should not, and be at peace with our decisions. I have found much greater fulfillment in practicing my faith, which includes taking risks, because then I have no regrets. The power of our thought frees us or destroys us. Deconstructing our subconscious messages, which are the building blocks for the reality we experience, into a thought process where we become comfortable with becoming the witness of our lives. It is the difference between making a decision from thinking about something and knowing and executing with conviction. It is about connecting with the essence of a thing rather than the form and fact of the thing. When we are on the spiritual path, the starting and ending point is us. We learn to care for ourselves, be accountable, responsible, compassionate, honest, caring, stretch to expand, be fulfilled, and expand again, trusting the universal creative process that is operating within us. And evolving our awareness is the same universal creative process that is sustaining and evolving life or consciousness itself. Wow. Wow. I chose this topic, Surrender Thy Name, to lead into the exploration of self-care because it comes from my own journey into the mystical marriage, the integration of my humanity and my divinity. A marriage that asked me to surrender any and all attachments I held as to how I objectified myself in the world around me. It's so easy to identify who we are at the level of personality and societal placement through our acquisitions and accomplishments, all the while consciously unaware that we have left our soul out to dry. So as we begin to surrender all the minutiae in our mind about who we believe we are and look at the spiritual truth of our infinite potential capacity to expand, what has gone before, and the creative instinctual divine urge that calls us into alignment with our soul, our sensory perception intensifies and becomes more acute in its recognition of our interdependence with the universe. You know how we start to really get that there's only one mind, only one thing happening here, and those things that we thought were coincidences, we realize are not. They are the use of the one mind reflecting back to us, our use. Our mind rests more and our hearts pump up at times like this, engaging life from a more intuitive feeling. We become more imaginative, find ourselves enjoying to begin creatively things, to be more spontaneous with our decisions and actions. It's as if the questions of trust just have melted away and we didn't even notice it. And we feel empowered and impelled by the adventures that lay waiting in the unknown, where once we needed to hold on to the present by making plans for the future. Now, while this may describe my experience in part of my mystical marriage, it is but just one rendition of surrendering a carefully crafted identity to play in the field of becoming essence. Stripping away the deeply encrusted illusions of not enough and the calcification, I would say, of movement needed to step outside of the box that never existed in the first place. We all teeter on the totter of illusion and reality, seldom sold on the majority of ideas that pass through our minds daily, but yet we have proven the power of intention to ourselves enough times that we recognize when a decision or a relationship or a particular path or calling is the real deal, meaning life supporting rather than life denying. In this act of surrender, our attention is not on gaining or creating, but on trusting enough to release. As we surrender the name or names we have ascribed to ourselves, then we have not need of willpower to force or push time or circumstance in our favor. In fact, the use of willpower really contradicts, I think, the main foundation upon which all true mental science is built, which is that we use a creative power which does not need to be urged or forced into action. So when we can face the fears of the unknown kind, if we have faith, we can have faith in a power and presence for good always being everywhere present equally in all things. But we can't do it if we keep ourselves separate. Separate in our either-or vision brought about by naming ourselves, others, circumstances, as, you know, good or bad, victim or victor, dark or light. I always love those defining moments when we can feel the movement from separation to oneness. Aren't those wonderful? But they should never be attributed to an event or a person at hand. For events or circumstances are effects of that which has gone before within us. What has gone before in consciousness? This is our mental atmosphere, as Dr. Holmes describes it. It is the place our mind most often hangs out. So to actually experience a defining moment, a moment of complete presence through acceptance of what is to have prepared our mental atmosphere in that certain way as to have caused and therefore attracted that experience. So as everything already exists in the mind of God, so too does one's defining moment before it ever happened. So I'm going to give you an example. I've used this many times, actually. I just think it's a powerful example. Many would say, if asked, that the defining moment in Jesus's life was his crucifixion. But I feel it was before his arrest in the Garden of Gethsemane, by fully giving his mind, spirit, and body back to God, sweating blood, thy will no longer separated, surrendering thy name, saw him through his violent death. So he had the faith, therefore, to face the fear. And when Pilate asked if he was king of the Jews, his response was not one coming from fear. He calmly stated, it is as you say. You see, Jesus knew who he was, and he did not have to defend or deny himself. And I'm going to add here that Jesus also knew he was both man and Christ. In relevant terms to us, that is, knowing that our divinity and humanity are one thing. But yet, I know there are those out there who are saying at this moment, but what value is there in having a name? Well, you know, psychologists say that you need to name something before you can change it. Not unlike our teaching that says we must know what the mental cause is behind the physical condition we wish to change. The process of changing the condition is by changing the thought. And this we cannot do unless we know what the thought is that we are changing to replace it with a new thought of truth. So yes, there is great power in a name or naming. It says who we are known as, again, to all those around us. And yet, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. That's a popular reference, as you all know, to William Shakespeare's play, Romeo and Juliet, in which I think it's, Juliet seems to argue that it does not matter that Romeo is from her family's rival House of Montague, right? Or that he is named Montague. And the reference is often used to imply that the names of things do not affect what they really are. And the conclusion, therefore, is there is a transformative power in living from our essence rather than from our name. So when we are facing a fear, perhaps it might be best not to identify ourselves by naming it, because then we are drawing that thing inside us and personalizing it. Instead, surrender its name so to keep our faith in the presence and the power of God as love and God as law. As we move through our own contemplations around facing our fear and deepening our faith, I'm going to invite you to just keep the wisdom of surrender in your mental dialogue. As surrender provides space for a newly creative idea to emerge. And no positive and sustainable change, in my experience, can arise out of an unsurrendered consciousness. So I put together a few tips that you may find useful should you choose to allow the wisdom of surrender to guide you in deepening your faith. Acknowledge and honor your emotions by expressing them. Practice the energy of yielding to instead of opposing the flow of life as it shows up. Affirm the power for good and its potential in the now and accept it unconditionally. And narrow your focus. In other words, pay attention, be present without naming the situation. That asks us to lay down all judgment and attachment to how it should look in that moment. To have faith, we need to remember that only thinking makes it so. Only consciousness creates. And in that, remembering, surrendering up our need to control or attempt to control the universe. It knows what it's doing. It is, I like to think of it this way, it is about the lesser giving way to the greater and our willingness to be the vessel through which it may happen. This is our true defining moment. When we open to this awareness and give way to it, use me, oh God. At that moment, there is no feeling of separation, and we will know ourselves as God moving through the human experience, regardless of how dark it may appear. So the next time you are having what I like to refer to as a Garden of Gethsemane experience, try to remember it could be your defining moment. The right to reveal who you are and come into right relationship with your essence and the world. Surrender thy name or names. Be thou not afraid. Draw your life experience from listening, not proving, owning, not borrowing, accepting, not judging. And when we enter into the timeless dimension of the present, life becomes helpful and cooperative. Look at the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. My friends, I have learned there is something within me that remains untouched. It is my pure essence. Our spiritual beingness, which exists eternally in the present. And as we surrender thy name, we are connected with the soul energy source of our being. The quality of our consciousness is enhanced immeasurably. We see clearly what needs to be done. We can focus on one step at a time and ensure we are taking care of ourselves along the way. So in closing, I share this with you from Dr. Ernest Holmes. You are a self-choosing mind in a divinity which permeates everything. You are always in the midst of life, a life that lives eternally and lives through you now. Therefore, you need not be disturbed by the passage of time, the movement around you, nor the variations of experience through which you go. There is something within you that remains unmovable, that always speaks directly to you, saying, be still and know that I am God, no matter what your unique creative process of being is in that moment. And so it is. Amen.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.